You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Madden!
Madden!
Welcome to the India Explained podcast, recorded in London and San Francisco. One take, unscripted, no rehearsal.
Hey, Bunty, greetings. Greetings to our listeners. We know it's been a long time. Apologies for that. Just been a really busy time. But, Bunty, how are you doing?
I'm very well, Rohit. And it has indeed been a huge amount of time. I think this year, more than any other, when we went into the new year, we didn't know that we were going into the shitstorm. So now, as we are on the final throes of this year, it's good to reconnect. But no, this year the hygiene level for the question, how are you, is very different. You know, I'm so far healthy. Well, people I know are healthy and well. There have been no reported incidents of illness or death. And that makes me feel happy. So that is the response to that question in terms of, and how are things at your neck of the woods, Rohit?
Pretty good. I mean, no complaints. You know, it's been it's been an interesting year. I've been mostly online. That actually worked out pretty well. But you know, of course, the sad thing has been the absolute disastrous response to the lockdown in the U.S., to the pandemic in the U.S. I mean, you know, we've just had massive deaths which were preventable because of poor governance, foolishness, and also what happened in India, you know, the forced lockdown and the immense human misery. Go ahead, please.
I think you're right, Rohit. I think no country has got it right. I think New Zealand was the only country that came right, but there are different countries which have got different levels of mess up. And you know, UK is no great shakes themselves. You know, we have the highest European death rate given the nation, our UK size, population of about 70 odd millions. We should have had nowhere near the number of people who died dying.
Right.
And as we speak, I'm in tier 4 in London, yes, which essentially means that you stay at home and do very little, right? But I hear what you're saying, Rohit, that, you know, in the US, it is because you went through up until the lead up to the elections, you essentially had half the population believing that it was a little cold and nothing would happen. And, you know, people behaving strangely around public health issues.
I mean, you know, on the one hand, this country has the highest or the best, you know, higher education system in the world. The largest number of Nobel laureates, I think. But this kind of, you know, mass populism, which has been exploited for political reasons, people saying that, you know, wearing a mask doesn't protect you, it protects someone else, right? So the politicization of that is taking away freedom as government tyranny. It just, the costs of that kind of ideological pigheadedness have, you know, come home in a very brutal way. And then the other side of it is the whole, you know, anti-vaxxer thing, which includes highly educated people also who should know better. I mean, one of the places which has the, a really strong culture of anti-vaxxers is Berkeley, which is, you know, known as this progressive liberal bastion. So, you know, it speaks to some, I think, some deep failings in American society. But you're right. I mean, nobody, you know, got it perfectly right, and nobody should be blamed for that. But sort of willfully messing up, ignoring the advice of experts, you know, even accepting that there are some trade-offs and difficult decisions to be made, so many of the deaths were preventable. So much, you know, unnecessary human suffering. And you know, as someone who grew up in India, both of us grew up in India, we saw this, right? This was the tragedy of India, right?
Yeah, yeah. Now, tell me something. How has your personal working life been impacted by this nonsense that is COVID?
It's actually very interesting. I mean, it's been an interesting experiment. At my end, you know, I've been teaching some online courses for several years, and I've taken some, you know, online training, and I have a background. You know, I started my career working in the internet industry. And I've had an interest in, you know, online education and questions of technology and how they transform different sectors of society. So I was able to make the transition well, I think, and I think I'm kind of happy about that. It's been interesting in that I think in the academic sphere generally, it's shown us what can work online and what maybe needs still to be done face-to-face. It's also revealed things that, you know, what is the essence of the educational experience in America? And the essence of the educational experience is basically that, you know, to put it very bluntly, students pay large sums of money or their parents pay large sums of money so that they can, you know, meet other people, they can, you know, socialize and so on. It's not just about the learning. But on an individual basis, it's actually been fine. You know, I've my teaching went well, knock on wood. I finished a book. I've learned a couple of things. That's something I started doing a few years ago, which is try to learn one new thing each year or pick up an activity just to remind oneself of how hard learning is. I think it helps me as a teacher. So, you know, I've been playing the drums for a couple of years now, understanding more. I have an absolutely wonderful teacher, learning more about music theory. I just listen to music completely differently now. And in a sense, listening to music, I mean, I can't imagine life without music. There's a quote I have by the jazz drummer Art Blakey, which is, music washes away the dust of life. And, you know, I listen to 7-8 hours of music a day, whether it's in at home or in the car. So it's been no complaints there.
Well, my life, look, I think pretty much like you said, my life, obviously we went into lockdown fairly in an unprepared, unrehearsed way. And, you know, obviously you were in the habit of working from home because that's how your work life was structured. I often was traveling, either I was traveling or at work, but I was never working from home. That category of working from home was essentially saved for, you know, washing machine delivery or, you know, a test match, fourth day, critical moment. I would like pull working from home. And in my mind's eye, working from home was always like, you know, a one-way ticket to Loserville. Because, you know, if you wanted to do anything in business, presenteeism was the call of the day, right? So that kind of changed. That equation quietly changed, Rohit, very quickly. Because, you know, we were obviously technically we were able to do this. And then once that kicked in that, you know, because there were a lot of people who thrived on presenteeism, right? You know, that, you know, I will show up at before the boss does and leave after the boss does. That patta got cut big style, right? Because it didn't really matter, right? And the other things that happened is obviously there are a couple of things. My sartorial sensibilities have slipped, right? Because in the early days of the lockdown, I would make an effort to kind of, you know, shave, put on a shirt, you know, keep my video on. Now with passage of time, I realized that, you know, this idea of dressing for work is hugely cumbersome. And then obviously dietary, I had early in the year, I had a biscuit habit that was spiraling out of control because I was snacking to compensate for social company. Like when I would be at work, I'd be walking around meeting colleagues at desk, etc. And that would take the nip out of snacking. But so I was very sedentary and I was snacking. Those were kind of the changes that happened. Did you notice any changes like that in your day-to-day schedule?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that grew up in India, there's so many delicious things to eat all the time. So I wind up making 2-3 trips a week to different Indian stores. And I stock up on, you know, whatever you... what you call chanachur or namkeen, those kind of snacks and everything. Right. Banana chips from Kerala, Andhra mix, you know, sukha bhel, chakli, like the whole of India is represented. I think I may not have had some like Kashmiri snacks and Manipuri snacks. So plus the Indian habit of biscuits, which are called cookies. Americans don't know how to make cookies or biscuits. So, but then, you know, I found some like stores because San Francisco has a long history, Irish population. So, you know, there's a lot of delicious stuff from the UK, Cadbury's. And Indians have a Cadbury addiction. So yeah, it was a bit out of control. It's, you know, plus also enjoying different kinds of things, kebab, samosa, etc. But I think I've just about bent the curve if I don't lapse again. And, you know, for health reasons also, I'm actually not supposed to have any of this. Therefore, my solution has been to not see my doctor. But...
No, I think when we reflect on this time that we have spent, you know, at home, you know, trying to hold down to the basics, which is, you know, hold up a professional self. And, you know, I have worked with colleagues in other parts of the world, and they are all facing similar challenges because, you know, space is at a premium, privacy is at a premium. You know, I was thinking with your... son being the age he is, it comes with a certain set of challenges. My daughter being the age she is, it comes with a certain different set of challenges. So I think we have to be hugely respectful of people who have, you know, just kind of held their shit together and got to where they've got to. Because, you know, I think at the top end of 2020, somebody told you that, you know, the aim of 2020 should be to, you know, get to the end unchanged or unscathed. I think that we would have said, no, not really. We would like to do this, improve that, the other. But I think all give and take done, I think. So some of these things, like, you know, how we are snacking. I think the other thing is I've realized that, you know, track pants, right? So there's like formal trousers, which you wear to work, right? Then there is jeans, right? And then there is track pants. Now, track pants is a gateway garment, by which I mean that the moment you put on track pants, it is impossible for you to do, to maintain a sense of self-discipline at work. I have noticed that, at least with me, that my guard tends to drop, right? Because I don't know why that is, because, you know, I don't do... When you're in academia, do you have to dress a particular way?
Not really. I mean, I've had some... So there's a meme. There's a meme on the internet, and BuzzFeed had carried an article called Professor or Homeless, where they show you photos of a guy and you have to dress... You have to guess if it's a professor or it's a homeless guy. And it kind of captures what the academy is. So there's no pressure to dress. But I will say this, that there is more pressure on women to dress than on men. Like guys going, you know... I've been at conferences in America where I've seen guys Hawaiian shirt and shorts and, you know, flip-flops, chappal. I never liked dressing formally, but a few years ago, I actually started missing it. So occasionally, I would dress formally. So I do make an effort to dress because not like go over the top. So it's casually, you know, I dress casually, but I just feel that, you know, for me personally, that's a way of like showing respect to what I do.
No, I completely get it. And you introduced me to these brand of trousers that were kind of, you know, athleisure almost, like, you know, they were technical garments, which I'm a massive convert to. And for the last 3-4 years at work, I've been using those garments, you know, without questions asked. That's the way that would be the bottom taken care of.
I think the divide in dressing, to me, is not about formal and casual. It's about... You can be dressed casually, but you can, you know, not be shabbily dressed. Like, you know, like my art teacher, in St. Paul's, Calcutta. So yeah. I won't even get into like him with his, you know, like filthy pajamas and stuff. But sweatpants have always been a no-no for me. Like, you know, I think fleece is a wonderful invention.
Yeah.
I think there's something about that. And I don't want to, you know, I understand there's a class dimension out here. Maybe not, because, you know, you can actually get a really good pair of trousers in America for $15.
Right.
You know, you can get a one-time investment, a brand like Dickies, which does workwear, for $30, or on Amazon, $25 sometimes, you know, a Levi's pair of trousers. And those are solid, they will last you for years, and it doesn't have to be ironed you know, that Indian concept of istrimar and that crease. Yeah, yeah. You don't have to do any of that. But for me, sweatpants are something I've just never liked them.
You are very wise, Rohit. Sweatpants, trust me, and for all our listeners, men, maybe this goes for women, but I do not know the impact of sweatpants on women's lives. But I can speak for myself, from my limited experience. I was not a sweatpant person. Now I'm addicted to sweatpants. And I feel that if you're wearing sweatpants at work, obviously people are seeing your upper half. It just, I don't know. I think I have to, I mean, one of my New Year's resolution is to step away from sweatpants. So that is one of the things that I will do. The other thing you mentioned in conversation, Rohit, was Amazon, right? I have been a late comer to Amazon. My wife was kind of the queen of Amazon. She would be, ordering left, right, and center, and we'd be in receipt of many mysterious packages. Now I have discovered Amazon. And I realized that it is you essentially end up buying shit inspired by algorithms. So the other day I bought sugar cubes on Amazon. And I realized that, again, this is something that is happening without rhyme or reason. Do you have an Amazon habit? Do you shop compulsively?
I do have many habits. And I was, discussing this with my wife today, that she's part of a very interesting Facebook group called Waste Not, Want Not.
Right.
So we just got, we cleared out a lot of stuff, kids, toys, clothes that I've had and, things that don't like fit or, and for most of my life growing up in India and for most of my life in the US, which I've not really been a consumer, but it's interesting that, we use Amazon and I'm conflicted about that. And I understand completely this makes me a hypocrite because I do find some of their policies troublesome, but the convenience is just enormous, right? We do our groceries on Amazon, other than, going to Trader Joe's or the Indian store for other stuff. But I remember teaching about this in a class I teach called Identity, Privacy, and Politics in the Digital Age, which is, about what's called the power of the default, right? Which is that once you save your credit card information on Amazon and you can buy stuff on one click, you will buy more. Amazon's algorithm is amazingly effective. The other thing is that once you have a Prime account, you start getting addicted, not just to the objects, but you actually start getting addicted. It gives you a thrill that, hey, this is same-day delivery. Hey, this is one-day delivery. So there are a lot of things for which Amazon is, it actually undercuts competitors. There are other things for which Amazon is not the cheapest, but because you would rather get it in 2 days, you wind up doing that. So we've had one Prime account. My wife is more disciplined. Sometimes you're absolutely right. I'm like, this looks cool. Let me get this, right? So to give you an example, I'm either fought off or just fighting temptation as we speak. I'm again trying to turn the corner of this one too, because really I do feel that, I'm not a Puritan where that Indian idea that, you must live with two shirts and one pair of shoes all your life, regardless of whether you can afford more or not. But on the other hand, there is something to be said about this glut of consumption that characterizes American society. But having this test match, I was thinking, let me get a cricket ball. And then it struck me saying that, boss, it's a beautiful thing, right? A red leather cricket ball.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, you have one and, you have one in your house. When I saw it, it's in a beautiful place. I think you have it in a bowl and it's with glass marbles or something.
Yes.
So it's a really it looks beautiful. Now, I don't have anything like that. And I was just thinking that, boss, even if you get it, where are you going to keep it? Like this study of my music room and my study, it's got a mid-century modernist aesthetic. So a cricket ball would look random, right? So again, that Amazon and the tech companies, they were big winners. They did add a lot of convenience to what we did in fairness. But, they also made out like bandits and they have effectively managed to change our shopping habits. I'll share one more thought. I know I'm going on for a long time, but it's a very interesting piece I'd read many years ago, which said that people tend to be very set in their habits, shopping habits. Like, people will have a habit of buying XYZ from store A and ABC from store B. But there are certain moments in your life, when you're expecting a child or when you maybe move cities. Those are transition moments when you can shift your consumption habits. And what retailers, whether it's Target, Amazon, or in India, I guess Big Bazaar or whatever, What they wait for are those opportunities. What's happened is that the pandemic is one such time. And I think that a lot of people who've gone online are not going to go back.
I think, you know, the way to resolve this Amazon Prime addiction, Rohit, here's what I've tried. So I get drawn into browsing through completely random shit that I will never realize. So here's the thing, right? The other day I was kind of toing and froing about getting a toasted sandwich maker, right? All of a sudden I came up with this urge that, you know, normal sandwich mein maza nahi aata hai. I need to have toasted sandwich. Matlab, you know, put the bread, put in the material, put in the other layer of bread, and you know, you have to put oil on the outside, and it comes out as grilled sandwiches, right?
So you're talking about that grill which you just clamp shut, right?
Yeah. So that's toasted sandwiches. So that I thought was a legitimate value addition to my life.
Yeah.
Right. And I respect that, and it didn't cost me too much. It was about 10-15 quid. Like, you know, it was not one of the high spec numbers. It was like a utilitarian. As long as I didn't get electrocuted, I was okay, right? And though it was made in China, I thought that nikal lenge, isme zyada tension nahi hai. But the other things that started happening was, like, you know, I started looking at a globe shaped drinks dispenser, right? Then a trolley that could accommodate both food and drink. So all of these things are subconsciously gearing me towards less movement and more sloth, right?
Yeah.
I said, screw this. I'm not going to buy it. I slept over it. And the next morning, that kind of high of purchasing something new went away. But my low point has been ordering sugar cubes of Amazon just to save myself a trip to the... I've got this strange philosophy that you probably eat less sugar if you use a sugar cube as opposed to a spoon of sugar, because a spoon of sugar visually looks more than a sugar cube. But this is just in my logic. I don't think that if you measure it, it'll make a blind bit of difference. But that's been the low point on Amazon. And I think the fight back begins from New Year, which is I will look at stuff, but rest on it before ordering it. So I will not click buy. Do you waste not, want not? Is this something that you are subscribed to fully, or?
I'm actually not, because I don't have a presence on Facebook, but I, you know, I also, over the last few months, just, there's a lot of stuff, like, you know, I donated to the Salvation Army and Goodwill, because my point is that, you know, you bought something, and my idea now is that whatever is there at home, it's not like I'm going to stop buying stuff altogether. I, to me, that hypocrisy about consumption, the idea that, you know, everyone must aspire to the Gandhian ideal of owning zero was very troublesome in all kinds of ways. It was also making a virtue out of necessity. And you know, admittedly, by was immensely privileged in India by the standards of what most people have. But, you know, that concept of the radios not working, then, you know, like, as a friend of mine put it, he said that you're putting sellotape on the antenna, grandmother is standing near the window to get reception, Bata shoe is being repaired 3 times by a cobbler, and my mom and dad will get irritated hearing this, because they'll, you know, say that you're making it sound to be that, making it out to be that we lived in very dire circumstances, which we didn't. But you know what I mean, right? That, like, his shoe is torn again, like getting it cobbled. So I've also had a kind of reaction to that. But, you know, just this idea of excess is something that, I want to curtail. What I have, I want to use. And what is not being used, let me give it away to someone if it's in good condition. Not because I'm a great person engaging in an act of charity, because that's a horrible attitude. But let someone use it. Let someone get value out of it, right? That's better. That's better than just keeping it and then, you know, thinking that technically it's still mine, so it's not wasted, right? Because, you know, this is the other thing that happens, that you get something, it's a great product, it's out of sight, it's out of mind, or using it becomes very cumbersome. And, you know, that's one reason why I haven't got a cycle, for instance, partly because of my laziness, but just the kind of topography of where I live, San Francisco being hilly, taking it out will, it'll involve wheeling it up a hill before I can cycle. Because I don't have the stamina to go up the hill on the bike. Or I'll have to, like, you know, fix it on a bike carrier and take it to a bike-friendly neighborhood. And that then, you know, becomes another kind of a production. So I'm still going to get one, you know, imagining this romantic scenario where I would do it. And then I said, beta, you know yourself, right? The first week you will power through, then it will lie there. So don't.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think the cycling thing, Rohit, I'll touch upon it briefly. One of the things I have added to my life is a cycle. Now, I would have thought that by this time, I would have become what people call a middle-aged Lycra lout. Or it's actually called a mammal, middle-aged man in Lycra, right? Mammon.
I love it.
Yeah. So, but obviously, first off, I didn't buy a bike that was race worthy. It was just a road bike, a roadster or road bike. Something it's a hybrid. That's what it's called. And I thought, obviously, in London, I don't face the challenges that you do in San Francisco. I took it out a few times. I've got a good road awareness. I think by and large, drivers are courteous in London when you're bicycling, because it's becoming a more of a prevalent culture. It's not an oddity. But that said, for the last two months, I haven't actually used my bike. And I don't think I will for the next 2 months, because when it's 0, -2, -3, taking N2 off, you know, downhill, uphill, bus banta nahi. You know, so I think you did a very wise move. Topography aside, stepping aside from a bike, because the other thing that happened was, like you, my wife saw the fact that I was bicycling, and she said that this seems like you're onto a good thing. I will also get a bike. So we went. I said, okay, let's get a bike. But when we went to the shop, the bike guy said, you can buy a bike, but and my wife hasn't cycled for like ages, so she doesn't. So she will not be comfortable, or kind of, she's not as reckless as I am, as in, she will not ride the bicycle on a street. She will want to take it to a park, practice for like 4 years before she actually ventures on the street. Now, that being the lay of the land, the guy at the bicycle store said that your big headache is transporting two bikes to a park where you can cycle, which will come with a certain cost, right? Yeah. And then all of that added up to the GDP of a small kind of Andaman Nicobar type situation. So I said, screw this. I'm not going to do this. So I think the bicycle thing is gone. Now, Rohit, I'm mindful of time. So we wanted to kind of wrap this, kind of keep this a general meander about 2020 and what you know, we have faced, obviously joining up after a bit of a gap. If there are three things that you would want to pass on to our listeners for this year, three lessons that you have learned about yourself and the year, what would they be? And then I'll hold forth on some myself and then probably draw to a close. So over to you for the three things that you have learned from 2020 that you would wish, you know, you would want to share with our listeners. Is there anything that you feel that fits into that ballpark?
Yeah, I think in combination with the fact that I was really off social media, I think, you know, spending time by yourself is very, it's truly very wonderful and rewarding. And I think it really clarifies a lot of things about, you know, why do you, self-motivation, right? So that has been, you know, I don't want to sound Deepak Chopra-esque here. So I think that has been like a gift for me. The second thing, I think, just, you know, again, the value of time, because I thought at the beginning of this pandemic that I would have tons of time, and I did do a good bit, but, you know, because you're not commuting, because you're working from home, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have masses of time. I mean, it's amazing how quickly time has gone by. So that combined with, you know, the fact of getting old and older, again, something about the value of time to appreciate it. And three, just, you know, to really kind of appreciate living in the moment. I mean, over the last few years, for a complex set of reasons or whatever, I just, you know, really said, I'm going to do a lot of things I wanted to do. And those included things like, you know, going for music concerts, going for concerts with my son. We saw Mary J. Blige and Nas. We saw Metallica together. We saw The Who together, you know, traveling to different parts of California, really getting to know the Central Coast. And I'm making a trip to London, and, you know, we went there, we met, you know, made a whole bunch of friends who used to listen to the podcast and follow the account. You know, we made a trip to Europe with my family, and, you know, we met your family there. We met up there. So I am just so grateful that I did all of that, because, you know, there's something about this pandemic which tells, you know, this is not hopefully going to be the new normal, though there are going to be more pandemics down the line, but it's something that it tells you about the precarity and fragility of what we take for granted. So those would be my three observations.
Okay, so my observations first is I have decided that, you know, I need to eat healthily. Now, I don't mean eat responsibly. I mean that, you know, I need to replace things that, you know, I think I'm actively self-harming with the amount of things that I was eating that was essentially harmful to health. So I'll kind of course correct that. And if I can pass on to listeners that to the extent possible in your own everyday life, you know, if small changes can make a big difference, that I've found, that I'm going to try and do. I am going to walk a little bit more because I think I have realized that, you know, we live in kind of car cultures. And where possible, I'll try and walk to the shop. And, you know, that was something that I wasn't doing enough of. And finally, the last thing, so eating healthy, walking, not running, because, you know, running is, you know, you have to kind of train and think. And there are other people, other podcast people who will tell you that, you know, you need to start running and running is the way forward. Unfortunately, no, I'm not one of those people. Walking is the way to go for me. And yeah, I think the other thing is, you know, as you were saying, Rohit, you know, it kind of crystallizes what is important, what is not, what is noise, what is true. And I think I would urge, without getting again to Chopra, Deepak Chopra about it, is that, you know, focus on what is important in your life and everyday well-being. So if you can do that, that'll be great. So that's all for me. So and in closing, I'd say 2021 will be different. Embrace the vaccination as and when it presents itself to you. Let's shake this off. But up until the vaccination, let's all stay safe and well. And I think Rohit and me are planning to figure out how best we approach our podcast, how we come at it, what angle we look at. So watch the stay tuned in, and Rohit and me will come back with our plans for the new year in the next few weeks and months. Rohit, over to you for the closing.
You've said it wonderfully, Bunty. That's it. Yeah, Bunty and I do have some plans, and you know, we'll be more frequent. We've got something lined up. Again, we'll share it with you very soon. And, you know, we thank you for your support to our loyal listeners. You know, we apologize again for having kind of been AWOL for the last few months, but there was just, you know, too much going on, really, just very busy. But we are back now. So, again, wish you all a very happy new year. 2021 will be different. We made it to 2020. That was the achievement. So take care, and we'll see you guys soon. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to us. Rohit and Bunty would like to sign off. Please stay tuned. Follow us on India Explained on Twitter. Keep listening. Thank you for all your support.
Save big money on your roofing project at Menards with Owens Corning Shingles. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements and enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning Duration Shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 24 colors of Owens Corning Duration Shingles and transform your home today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.